In May, against all expectations, Malaysia's opposition won a comprehensive victory, ousting the corrupt government of Najib Razak.
This is mother of all elections and is the father of all leaders!
The fact that Dr. Mahathir has won was predicted by almost nobody. People thought it would be
at 92,
close,
he remains a potent political force.
Tonight is a great day. People, power is won.
I wish that everybody can see this history at this moment.
So the election has been won and the opposition are in power. But now starts the hard work of repairing or building new checks and balances, robust democratic institutions that can prevent any future government from abusing its power. It's a tough task. It won't be an easy road. Ivy Jasia is a veteran civil rights and women's rights activist in Malaysia. She's very clear-eyed about the challenges ahead. But a tear still comes to her eye when she thinks about the recent election and peaceful change of government.
We are still immensely happy. I think we are still basking in the happiness of knowing that Malaysians were able to bring a huge, huge change. We got rid of a government that was in place for 60 years, peacefully, through the ballot box.
You've described it as a miracle moment.
It is a miracle moment because for so long, Malaysians just believed that we should be status quo. That no matter what it is, at the end of the day, you can send your children to school, you can buy a house, you know, you have a good life, a fairly good life. But I think the fact that a lot of people were suffering, the economy was getting worse, and I think the utter corruption sealed the deal.
Okay, so the moment has arrived. There is now a new government. What are the big things that need to change in Malaysia?
Definitely freedom of the press. Yes, we have the internet. Yes, we have social media. And that helped a lot too, you know, to contribute to sharing of good ideas. But really, at the end of the day, if you want to get to rural Malaysia, you need to get to the radio, you need to get on television. So I think it's really important that there should be freedom of the press and the press should be allowed to do their work in a balanced fashion, right?
And is that happening?
It is already happening. The papers are being more critical. It's already happening. Not enough for me. I mean, I think there still needs to be more. But it's already happening.
What about the end of gerrymandering? You need proper electoral reform because I understand it, yes. The rural electorates, predominantly Malay, have had far more importance.
The way it was designed is that if you're an opposition member, and they know you're very popular, they'll give you a constituency. Your constituency would have 200,000 voters. Whereas if you're a member of parliament from, you know, a Malay constituency, there'll be like 30,000 or 40,000 voters. So they need to correct all of that.
And is that major structural reform going to happen?
Well, it hasn't happened yet. But as soon as the new government was formed, they formed a institutional reform committee made up of the former chair of Bersih, which is the electoral reform NGO, some leading judges. All the five members are people who've been talking about electoral reform anyway. So they just released the report. So it's going to take place. I believe it'll take place.
Before you said the miracle moment was the overturning of 60 years of essentially one regime, mm-hmm. sort of UMNO, I suppose is what you're saying there.
They were never always a regime. I mean, they were, in the beginning, I think they were doing a pretty good job, but, you know, power corrupts and absolute power.
You're a veteran activist, so presumably a good half of your career has been spent fighting and agitating against
Dr. Mahathir, yes.
And now he's the saviour, now he's part of the miracle moment.
During the time of Internal Security Act, when my friends were, you know, arrested in 1987, 111 activists were arrested. I mean, that's when I felt that, oh my God, an activist for just merely speaking about human rights can be put away without trial. And Dr. Mahathir was responsible for that. When Anwar Ibrahim was arrested and the judiciary was used, you know, to basically prosecute him and persecute him. We were on the streets. We were fighting water cannons and then during the time of Najib too. Again, water cannons and tear gas. So I'm kind of used to speaking against Dr. Mahathir. So when he decided he's going to join our side of the fence, I mean, he was being very, very critical of Najib, right? And there's a lot of skepticism. And I remember a conversation about 2 years ago. It was during a festival. And I turned around to him and I said, you know, by then he was already very, very critical about UMNO and was very critical about Najib. Najib Razak. So I said to him, you know what he should do? He should just leave the party and form a new party. And that's what he did. When I told him this and I reminded him about, you know,
so you suggested it to him that he should.
You're going to claim responsibility.
So you know what
he said to me? He said, you must have been a subversive influence on me. You know, he can be quite witty. Point is, I'm glad that all of us are glad that he saw the light, that he gave up on UMNO. I remember telling him, it's so corrupt to the core, please, you have to leave the party.
Right. But to what extent is Mahathir Mohamad and those who joined the opposition like him, they were angry about the excesses of Najib Razak, but are they really committed to fundamentally changing the system that they originally created, which allowed for UMNO?
Yes, I know.
And
absolutely,
the regime to become as corrupt as it did, and also to privilege
themselves,
but also the Malay Bumiputras, the sons of the soil, as opposed to the other communities.
Yeah. I mean, the affirmative action from Malay Bumiputras was something that's supposed to be temporary, but of course it became permanent. Now, that's a good question. Do I believe that these very same people who were part of the problem, who were the problem, are now going to be the solution? What I do believe is I do believe in Malaysian voters. I do believe in Malaysia itself, right? I've learned not to idolize, you know, leaders, or put them on a pedestal and say, you are going to bring about change. There are some very good people. Yes, I can definitely say that the new Attorney General or the new Minister of Education, the Minister of Women, they all are very good people. I know them personally. But I'm not going to, you know, rely on the fact that they're good people. At the end of the day, they are part of a system that can get oppressive. We are very critical. We are very engaged. We feel invested. We keep reminding them, by the way, we put you there. Do not forget our vote counts and you need to depend on our vote. So I think that whole psychological barrier, that burden that we had for so long, that we can never change government, has been lifted. See, all my life, I've often wanted that. I just wanted Malaysians to say, we can change dirty underwear. This is called democracy. If they are bad, we'll throw them out. So I believe in the people.
So don't believe in the saviours. Believe in the institutions.
Yeah,
just make sure that there are checks and balances.
People will disappoint
you, yeah. So one of the most important checks and balances are the courts.
Definitely, as I said, freedom of the press, definitely electoral reform. Anti-corruption agency. The anti-corruption agency has to be strengthened. So they're doing everything right. I mean, right now it's a lot of talk, a lot of papers, a lot of plans. But we need to wait and see. I mean, it's been less than 100 days, right? So we need to see whether they will actually implement it.
And just earlier this month, you got a new Chief Justice. Who is your new Chief Justice?
Richard Malajun. He's from East Malaysia. He has a very good reputation. He's had really good dissenting opinions. I pray and hope that he will be an independent Chief Justice, honouring the rule of law.
And what happened to the old Chief Justice? Was he tossed out by the new government? And if so, why?
I would not use the word tossed out. I mean, I don't really know much about that. All I know is he was already on the way to retirement. He had an, inverted commas, early retirement. Yeah.
And I guess, though, in terms of independence of the courts, we want the courts to be independent of the politicians, but he has been effectively replaced by the new regime.
Yeah, they've been part of the regime. And I think what we want is a complete change. You know, we need to just throw away the old court and bring on a new court.
And under the previous regime, did the courts act independently?
No, I don't think they did.
So that previous Chief Justice was not independent?
I do not think he was.
So part of the
personal opinion, yes. Yeah. I think for the average Malaysian, which is anybody who belonged to the old regime, we'd be suspicious of them because they were part and parcel of the problem. They didn't speak up, right? We needed new people. So that we trust that these new people will, you know, go forth with the change.
My understanding is that the outgoing Chief Justice was past the retirement age already. So that was, if you like, the mechanism by which he was removed or encouraged to retire.
Yeah, I think he was encouraged to retire. I mean, I don't want to comment more than necessary because I don't really know the exact instances when he was not independent. But I do not know whether he was independent or not independent. But we believe the judiciary was not independent. On the whole, the system was not independent.
And so now it's time for a new...
New leadership, new judges who will operate independently and know when they operate independently that they will not be punished. I mean, it's like the editor. An editor will tell you, you know, in the past regime, when they did a favorable story about the opposition, people will be getting phone calls from Putrajaya. They'll be getting personal phone calls to say, how dare you write a good story about so-and-so. So people were actually, those phone calls were real, hovering around you, over you to say, do this and do that. All these institutions should be able to act independently without repercussions.
You're best known, Ivy Jasea, as a women's activist. You've worked for many, many years. You set up a series of women's shelters around the country. Mm. And you've also campaigned for changes to the law to better protect women.
Women's rights, yes.
It's a miracle moment, but I think, you know, just recently, I think in the last 3 weeks, there was something in the media about a very young girl, something like an 11-year-old being married to an old man. 41-year-old man. And that being legal in Malaysia for Muslim Malaysians, I understand. Yeah, not for all Malaysians, but for Muslim Malaysians.
It's not this crazy. It is just nauseating. Not only was she became a wife of a 41-year-old, she was the third wife of a 41-year-old man. Sharia law allowed it. So every state has a different Sharia law, but it allows for parents to go to court and ask for permission for their 10-year-old or 11-year-old or 12-year-old to get married. Any child below the age of 16, you can get married only for Muslims. We are very much aware of this for a long time, and we have, of course, been lobbying the old regime to change the laws, but they did not have the political will to do that. I mean, we have signed on to all the international treaties, and we have had experience doing this because having worked on domestic violence law, we were able to have a law, even though we were told that was not possible. But we were able to have that political will to change the law and to make sure that all the Sharia laws were subservient to the domestic violence law. They can do the same when it comes to child marriage. I think right now it seems to be that it's not going fast enough. You know, we've had the Deputy Prime Minister, who's also the Minister of Women, this is Dr. Wan Aziza, who said, well, we are legally speaking, yes, it is correct. We cannot nullify that marriage. Yes, legally speaking, but morally speaking, it's really quite nauseating, right? So what we're saying here is that, look, under the Child Act, it goes against. I mean, there are many, many legal arguments as to why we can nullify this marriage. But most importantly, she needs to be saying, we are going to change the law. The women's wings from the ruling government is saying, the parties are saying, let's change the law. We're going to keep advocating and lobbying for that change. There seems to be some hesitation, but I do also know that I think the ruling government's thinking is that we need to convince the many, many Muslims out there that this is possible.
And that comes back to what you were saying before about the importance of open and free conversation.
Absolutely.
Open and free,
yes.
Media.
Exactly.
I know you've worked for many years with Sisters in Islam.
That's right.
Which is a very strong advocacy group for women's rights coming from the Muslim
tradition.
And
they go back to the Quran. They go back to the written word and they draw inspiration from the written word, from the Quran, so that they show evidence and they share with you how it is not against Quranic principles. And that's what we did when it came to domestic violence. A Muslim man or any man cannot beat his wife. So there are many Quranic principles to show that a child should not get married. It's a form of abuse. So what I understand is the Deputy Prime Minister and also the Minister of Women, what she has said is that we want a fatwa, a religious edict to say child marriage should be banned. And she's hoping that with this edict, then the Muslims will say, oh, all right, you know, since it's a religious edict, we are fine with it. Good, you can have that strategy, but at the same time, you need to start drawing up the papers, the bills, and start preparing so that you can go into Parliament and make that change. I think both can happen at the same time.
Malaysia is such a magical place because of its diversity. Would you like ultimately to see one law for all Malaysians, or for there to continue to be different family law for Muslim Malaysians as opposed to the other communities?
We have never advocated for that. We understand that Sharia law is important to Muslims. We believe that the Sharia law can be revised and reformed so that it reflects human rights principles. That's all we've asked for. We've never asked for one law for all. We are quite clear about that. The Sharia law is supposed to be only for family issues, marriage, divorce, and so on. So Sisters in Islam, together with women's groups, Women's Aid Organization, an organization that I belong to, we've been advocating to reform Sharia law so that it has the same standards as the civil law. And again, the civil law too has many provisions that are discriminatory against women and children. Whatever the law is, we want the human rights standard, the global human rights standard. We have not advocated for one law for all.
Ivy Jasir, thank you so much for speaking to The Law Report. A fascinating conversation.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Ivy Jasir, who was in Australia to speak at last week's Caston Centre for Human Rights Law Conference. Thanks to producer Anita Barrow and also to sound engineer Melissa May. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more Law.